nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a heart.
Support for In the Garden comes from the Flower Farm, offering bedding plants, flowering pansies, trees, shrubs, and hanging baskets in all colors. The Flower Farm open 10 to 5 every day except Wednesdays at 6 Rory Road, Papke's Landing.
Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Good afternoon and welcome to KFSK's In the Garden. I'm your host, Mindy Anderson, and with me on the line from sunny Juneau, Ed Byarski. Good afternoon, Ed.
Hi there, Mindy.
How are you on this sunny, warm afternoon?
I'm just taking a little break here and found a shady spot before I get back to weed whacking and weeding and planting and other assorted stuff. So it's nice not having to wear my rubber suit this week.
That's right. In fact, I hope you've got some sunscreen on. Maybe you don't need it. You've got a bushy beard. Maybe you don't need the sunscreen, but some of us do.
Not from the present degree of exposed skin, no. I know last week was naked. There was a naked gardening day in there somewhere, World Naked Gardening Day, but it was not appropriate for our neighborhood.
Yeah, not something I really want to picture right now, Ed, but anyway, well, we're glad you're out gardening, and hopefully you can give us some good tips today. When we talked last week, we were quickly trying to talk about planting trees, and I thought maybe we could touch on that a little bit today. But first, I want to let people know that they can call in 772-3808 or 888-772-3808, and they can ask a gardening question. And if you want, you can also call in to the radio station to make a donation, because it is KFSK's Spring Membership Week. And we would appreciate any support that comes our way for donations. All right. So, Ed, last week we were just talking about making the hole for planting trees, and we were going to maybe talk about some bare root tree planting today, and also with burlap.
Yes, and one of the things that's a little different from last week, of course, is that this week we have to start watering. Last week, not so much.
Right.
But certainly having the hole the right depth, and again, remembering that we aren't digging deep holes for this stuff. If the tree is one that's potted, you don't need to dig any deeper, really, than it is already, unless you've got really compacted soil. It wouldn't hurt if you've got a digging fork or a pick mattock to loosen soil down deeper. But generally, the roots are going to be spreading out near the surface, within the top foot or so of soil. So you don't need to dig a deep hole. You're better off digging a wider hole, loosening up the material. If you're going to do amendments, really not a whole lot, because, again, that tree is going to eventually need to spread out into the surrounding soil. So if your soil is really, really poor, then you may be better off bringing in topsoil and making a large raised bed for it, but still hoping that you've got good drainage underneath all of that. So don't be making this really rich, wonderful soil in this hole that's just a little bit bigger than your existing pot or root ball or root system of a bare root tree, because that tree isn't going to want to leave. The tree is going to grow in that really nice soil and then won't want to leave to go out into the poor soil that's out around it. Essentially, it's like a pot in the ground almost. That is, it's completely different outside of what you just dug and filled up with all this wonderful compost and soil and sand and fertilizer and other stuff. So better off doing either a wide area that you fix up and improve, or, again, make a big raised bed, raised box, whatever it happens to take, that the tree can fill out into, looking at how big is this tree going to get, say, 10 years from now, say if it's an apple tree,
uh-huh,
or a cherry tree, or a maple tree. You're looking at something that's probably going to be 10 to 15 feet tall, maybe a bit more. It's probably going to be 6 to 10 feet wide. So the roots of that tree are going to be 6 to 10 feet wide. And if you, so think about that place where you're putting it. Is there room? Certainly you got to think about, is there room for the branches? But you've also got to think about, is there room for the roots to be able to spread out? Or maybe it's going to be a long, maybe it's a, kind of a long, narrow strip, say between the sidewalk and a street.
Uh-huh.
But if they've got room that it can spread, that's okay, even though it may be only 3 or 4 feet wide, still it's 10 or 12 feet long, that area where the roots are going to spread into. So consider that when you are doing your soil improvement.
Okay, and I always wonder, how do they do those trees that are basically built right into the sidewalks with a small hole and, you know, maybe something around it, and so all those roots just spread out underneath the sidewalks? And
well, that's, I mean, having done some of those downtown in Juneau on Main Street,
mm-hmm.
we actually there, yeah, they don't normally spread too much under the sidewalk because nowadays, not so much in the old days, but now the sidewalks are usually hard-packed gravel and rock fill underneath going down. Yeah, some roots may go into that, but not a whole lot. So we were doing, making large, long holes, and we excavated a big area, put soil in that, and then they actually had a support. So like you say, in between from tree to tree where it looked like there we had pavers downtown, they actually had special supports in there. So there was good soil underneath the pavers, and then the pavers themselves were supported on a framework, like a steel framework, so that, again, the roots did really go around, go underneath those areas. So they did give them enough room. So we had, so in there, these were root poles that were, oh, they were 18 inches to 2 feet deep. And so that's how deep the soil was, but then it was spread out. So each tree had the equivalent of a couple of yards, cubic yards, of topsoil to grow into. And then we had to make sure they were watered, and then they put in the, use. Probably seen the tree grates, the steel,
right.
perforated steel
mm-hmm.
grating that, so we had to very carefully line up our trees where they were and then gently lay the tree grates down over to support, but it allowed water to drain through. Of course, it allowed air to penetrate, also oxygen for the roots. So that was really important, having enough soil, planning for enough soil for those trees for the next 20 or 30 years or more.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, you know, it's...
You know, think about that. Where are these trees going? Choose the right tree or shrub for the right place. So you look up, make sure you don't have power lines overhead, so you're not going to plant a tree that's going to grow to 30 to 50 feet tall. That's going to grow up into your power lines. You're not going to plant a tree like a Sitka spruce 3 or 4 feet away from your house or your sidewalk, because it's going to get huge. So you want to think ahead on these, unless of course you're doing a complete replacement every 3 to 5 years of new trees, new shrubs, new landscaping. That's so you're always changing things. But it's a problem. People put the wrong trees right next to the house or under the power lines, and of course the power companies don't really care how attached you are to that tree when they come along with their pruning crew and they whack it off. I mean, that's within their rights to do that, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. How about if we talk a little bit about bare root trees? You know, I planted several of those in different places in the past, and I always make a little mound in the center of the hole for the kind of the tree to sit on and the roots to kind of go around, and you know, like a little mound for it to, that's what I've always done. Is that what I should be doing?
And that's perfect. Yeah, that's really good. So they have some firm support. You know, if you had, well, I know you have in your area, at least you've got a lot of muskeg there,
uh-huh.
and that can be a problem with trees having some support for them. And we also talk about staking them too, but so they have lateral support because of wind or children or dogs or whatever else, or snow, you know, if snow is going to be plowed from the outside of the from the street, so they need some support. But again, knowing that that is going to be, that muskeg is soft soil, and the trees may want to lean toward the light. So, and especially you get a tree that gets bigger and older. I've seen lots and lots of them, whether it be maples and apple trees and others, that are leaning toward the sun, toward the light, away from maybe big dark house or big dark spruce trees. So you have to have good support to start with, and then train them in their formative years, not so unlike children, I guess, that so they do grow up straight and tall and strong, as we hope for them to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And water them. Water them is at least the first year. You know, with the bare root trees, normally they establish really well. You know, bare root trees are normally sold and planted while they're relatively dormant or just starting to bud out. And so their roots wake up with the right time, along with the buds and the leaves and maybe flowers. So those are better. The potted trees, again, depending what they're potted in, you know, if it's fairly loose soil, you want to loosen up the root system. Take your scratcher, weeding tool, whatever, your or fingers, if they aren't too tightly packed in that trunk, in that pot, to loosen up the roots so they can spread out into the surrounding soil. And then you mentioned the bald and burlap, and usually those trees were grown in a silty clay, like down in the Skagit Valley or down in the Willamette Valley and other places I get trees from. Those are a challenge because that soil is so much different than our, you know, mixture of muskeg and sand and seaweed and whatever else we happen to make it. So we've got to gently loosen that, but we don't want to really break that whole root ball off. You know, usually you're better off leaving, if you can, leave the burlap on there. If it's got a heavy wire basket, those usually need to be loosened up or removed. But then just gently, if you can perforate with the this root ball, this clay root ball, like with high pressure hose. You know, get your hose out there and put it on the jet setting. And if you can push water, shove water, jet some water into that, again, that will help allow moisture to penetrate better and oxygen to penetrate better. Because when they dug these trees, they left behind a whole lot of roots. And if you've ever broken up one of these root balls, whether you dropped it off the truck when delivering it or something like that, burlap tore away, you'll probably see what looks like these big stubs of roots. Well, that's pretty much what they are. And there's not really that much small roots there, which are the ones that really do all the work. You know, they're those small, fine roots are the ones that take up nutrients, take up water, and all of that sort of thing from the soil for the tree. So a lot of that has been lost if the nursery people weren't doing some pre-digging, actually, even a year ahead. Like, they'll cut alongside the rows of trees so they cut off the big long roots, and that stimulates more roots close to the trunk, which is a good thing when they do go to come back to dig it then the following winter or spring before they wrap them up, ball them up, and ship them off to us and other people.
Okay. So, and people should not be hacking at them with various digging tools to try to get the clay off. Right, because that's damaging.
Not necessarily. No, if you can, again, if you can just gently loosen it, and again, whether that takes some sort of a scratching tool to loosen up, most critical is that they not be planted when they are just really hard and dry. I mean, this dry ball of clay is extremely difficult to rehydrate. So if we can soak them down, keep them moist, or wherever, I mean, and that's something for the consumer, the person buying the trees, that they look at where they've been stored. They haven't been stored just on top of the ground and drying out. that they've been perhaps buried in piles of wood chips or sawdust or something like that and kept moist. That's really critical. And same thing again for the potted trees, that you, before you plant them, they are well soaked. So again, that whether that kind of wakes up their little roots, the small roots that can take take things in. But again, then the watering, the follow-up watering is really critical, because these trees don't have lots of small roots to take up moisture. So you're going to have to be out there watering regular basis, at maybe 2 to 3 to 5 times a week maybe, to try to keep that root ball moist enough so that the new roots will start to grow, and of course so that the leaves survive too. I mean, and you can, especially in this weather, you'll definitely see, you know, the wilting of plants that aren't getting enough water.
So
plants that have been potted and maybe root bound, and that applies to shrubs, mm-hmm. that applies to vegetables or flower starts that you may be getting ready to plant. Again, for the small plants, of course, it's easier. We can put them in a, you know, a tray or something like that to wet them down. A lot of times it's a lot easier than planting this 200-pound or putting this big 200-pound root ball into some big tub to try to soak up moisture, which makes it even heavier yet, of course.
And when, okay, you got your tree planted, and I've kind of make like a ring around the tree, and so that when you water, it just kind of pools up and then kind of gradually soaks in. I always thought that was a good idea, so the water isn't just running off to somewhere else.
That's right, because again, it's going to be a challenge to get the water to penetrate for these potted trees and the bald and burlap trees. So that helps mulching, keeping weeds and grass and other competition away from the tree, so that they are not stealing the nutrients and stealing the water mm-hmm. from those newly planted trees. And so whether you're going to be using some cardboard or some fabric or other mulch, bark mulch around them, so again, that's going to help conserve moisture, reduce competition, and keep the weed whacker away from the base of that tree too, which is just about as deadly as most any of the other pests and diseases that we may have around town.
Okay, if anyone has any questions about planting trees or shrubs, give us a call, 772-3808 or 888-772-3808. Anything else you want to mention about trees, Ed, before we move on to maybe greenhouses or planting tomatoes?
Well, again, I mentioned about staking, and staking is important for support for, well, also, I guess, to keep critters away, two-legged, four-legged, and other assorted pests. Again, for you particularly, for trees that are deer candy, some of these new maples mm-hmm. and apple trees and cherry trees and lilacs and all of that, you're probably going to have to do some fencing around them. So get some sturdy stuff there around them to keep those critters away that might chew on the bark or chew on the leaves and the branches and all of that. But staking is important, and get the stakes out into the ground, spaced out around the tree. If you know which direction your prevailing wind comes from, if it's from the southeast particularly, or wherever that is, you know, that may be the side to have a couple of stakes closer together than on the north side of the tree, which doesn't usually get that much wind. So that really helps. And don't tie them tight, you know, like that you can twang the rope or the wire like a guitar string. So the trees do still need to move some. So whether you use some nylon strapping like I do, normally it's got a loose ring that's around the trunk so the tree can move back and forth a few inches. Or if you're using, you use strips of T-shirt material tied with a rope, or strips of pantyhose likewise. That's going to be soft around the tree, that's not going to cut into the trunk, into the bark. And then plan for, you know, look ahead. Usually I stake trees for about 2 years and then remove the stakes, remove the ties, and so that they aren't girdling the tree. And by that time, hopefully, the tree is still alive. It has grown a good root system so it can support itself.
Okay, Ed, we have a caller here on line one. Welcome to In the Garden.
Yeah, good afternoon. See, we have a little cherry tree that had a bad bout with deer here a couple years ago, but it was doing pretty good this year, and then I went to Juneau for about a week during this horrible weather. And when we came back, the thing was, the leaves are all brown and shriveled up, not all of them, but most of them. The branches are real brown, and it could be really bad weather we had where it got down, I don't think it ever got down to freezing here, but it got pretty cold. Could the bad weather have had the effect there, or is this likely something else?
Yes, probably. Certainly your weather, usually it doesn't happen, usually the result of the weather is, doesn't happen that quickly. You know, that one, with frost it can. Certainly if trees are well leafed out, I've seen it at my house where I brought up trees from down south, bring them out, unload them from the shipping container, and a day or two later we get a hard frost. They're already leafed out, hardened off for Seattle, maybe. But it's quite a shock up here, and getting that frost, that can very definitely do major damage to the buds. Flower buds are more tender than leaf buds, so that the flower beds are usually the first buds that are affected, as you say, turning brown and wilting or drooping. But certainly the leaves also, quite possibly. Otherwise, it can be a longer term, well, a result of actually last year's efforts. So us having poor growing weather for cold and wet for a good part of the summer can mean that the tree is weakened last year, didn't make as much nutrients as it may have needed to, it starts to leaf out and then just runs out of energy. And that can happen too. So it's sometimes it's hard to diagnose exactly why the tree died or looks like it's dying at least. Is there any new growth that looks possible, like there's some new green stuff coming out, even coming past or from behind the dead or wilting stuff?
No. When we left, it was looking pretty good. You know, we were, you know, pretty happy and hoping it was going to survive it. And when we got back, you know, it was all the bark or the branches were almost black. Leaves were wilted and brown. And we have a mountain ash there that has some brown wilted leaves on it too. But nothing else in the garden. And there's a lot of plants fairly close in there that none of the other ones seem to be affected.
Ah, interesting. Well, is this, and this tree that's most affected, was this a new tree just planted last year?
A couple years ago, we bought the thing, planted it, and the deer got into it that night. And so we've been kind of nursing it back here for a couple of years, and we thought we had high hopes it was going to make it this year, and then this happened, and we can't really figure it out. You know, it just is very strange. It looked really healthy,
right.
And
right.
You know, before we went to Juneau for a week.
Well. Yeah, I mean, I really can't give you any good advice other than if you're patient, you know, leave it there and watch it and hope for the best. And if you're not so patient, take it out and plant another one. One thing, though, too, you can do to just to check for, you know, how much alive it is or if it is, you know, just with your thumbnail or with a small pocket knife, just scratch through the bark. Start up near the top and you work your way down the bark. And, you know, you see green and green. And sometimes you'll get down near the bottom of the tree and find that it's brown down there, which is, of course, a pretty good indication that tree's not healthy. Sometimes the top of the tree doesn't know when it's really dead. It'll leaf out even. And then you get especially like the weather we are having now, this is enough to, you know, basically finish stressing it to kill it off. So if you're not seeing green bark down low, you're not seeing any new buds coming out, I am not optimistic about its survival.
Okay. All right. Hey, thanks a lot, Ed.
Thanks
you're
a
welcome.
Bunch.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's always difficult because you put a couple years into a tree or wherever where you put it, and then, you know, it doesn't live, and for one reason or another, it's always, you know, it's a hard thing, really.
Oh, it's traumatic.
And it is.
There are times when a tree, I mean, like this fellow said, one tree in the middle of all the other healthy, mm-hmm. apparently healthy plants and trees will die, and there is really no, you know, can't come up with a good reason for it. And, I mean, I'm diagnosing over the phone, of course, which is, you know, more challenging than most. But still, there's sometimes you can't give a good reason to say, yes, it's definitely because we got that particular tree was the wrong one on the, maybe the particular root system was better adapted to drier soil, better drained soil than wet soil. And there are different rootstocks on cherry trees for that, really, that specific reason that they are more drought tolerant or wet soil tolerant or something else. And sometimes it takes 2 years for the tree to really be affected and then finally die because it didn't have enough nutrients, wasn't able to grow enough and come back well enough to for the next year.
Ed, we have another caller. We're going to take the caller here on line one. Welcome to In the Garden.
Hi, David Berg calling.
Hi, David.
Hi.
Hi, Dave.
Good afternoon. Hey, Ed. So I had a question. We're having some debate up at the fire hall, fire station, about the rhododendrons around the building. And, you know, they were planted, I think, 5 years ago, maybe four plus anyway. You know, there's some small buds on them this year, but they certainly haven't, you know, come into, you know, flowering at all. And there have been some very nice rhododendrons around town that have flowered already. So we're thinking that, well, maybe they weren't planted in good soil or they're missing something. What do you think, Ed?
Well, look, I know we've kind of talked about it a little bit earlier in the season. Look at the health. First, look at the leaves. I mean, are the leaves nice, dark green and healthy, or are they rather yellowish green, which would indicate a need for some, well, at least for some magnesium, some Epsom salts, which we've talked about. How do the shrubs look for color wise?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, they are the yellowish green. They're not a deep green for
sure.
They're
kind of spindly looking, really, aren't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So at least, you know, first thing, give them some Epsom salts. My wife and I were just talking about that, and we've been doing it. In fact, I've got some in the truck. I'm going to do that today for one of the ladies I'm going over to garden at her house.
Oh, huh.
So give them a teaspoon, 1 to 2 teaspoons of Epsom salts and a gallon of water. First water that in around the tree.
Uh-huh. Okay. For each plant.
This is assuming that they're, yeah, per plant, if these plants are, say, 3 feet across or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Per plant.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Then some rhododendron fertilizer. Again, read the directions on the package. That may be 1 to 2 cups of fertilizer. Gently scratched into the soil, and hopefully these have bark mulch underneath them, that they aren't lots of grass and weeds around them.
No,
so keep that away from them.
Yeah, there's bark mulch around them. So when you talk about rhododendron fertilizer, you're not talking about...
Roots are very shallow, and that's good. The other thing, too, when you mentioned, or Mindy mentioned, about them being kind of spindly, I don't know which side of the building they are on, but particularly if they're on the north side of a building, kind of close to the building, they may not be getting as much light as they need. So around here in southeast Alaska, you know, they really like more sun, and that will keep them tighter, and they won't grow so far. Basically, they're trying to reach for the sun is essentially what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they are on the... probably the two worst sides of the building for, you know, for sun. East and north.
So, I mean, that's something to consider. And so what do you do about that? Well, they can be moved out if there's a place for them. Mm-hmm. Move out into a sunnier location. That would help. They are not difficult to move because they do have a nice tight root system. They can be lifted and moved out. Making sure, look at your, I mean, if you can dig, you know, nearby on each side of them, do a little test hole to see, well, what's the soil like there? Is it reasonably porous that you can dig into it fairly well? Is there some organic matter? You know, a mixture of sand and muskeg is perfect soil for rhododendrons.
Oh.
So, you know, no problems there. They like acid conditions, which we certainly have in Southeast Alaska. Mm-hmm. So that part, you know, like you say, seeing other ones around town that are thriving, great big old ones, you know, it's you know, location, certainly, location and nutrients and drainage and sunshine, it all comes together.
All right. Well, you talk about now fertilizer scratching into the dirt. What do you have a recommendation there as to what ratio of fertilizers we should be getting for this?
I'm sure your local retailer should be selling a rhododendron and evergreen fertilizer. I mean, it's specifically made for that kind of stuff, including, and that can also go for Mugo pines and other evergreen shrubs with, you know, needles.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it is more acidic acid for acid-loving plants. It should probably say that right on the box or on the bag of fertilizer that you buy.
Mm-hmm.
And it should say, based on the size of the thing, if it's a 3-foot diameter shrub, that you give it 2 cups or a pound or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so that's, so read the directions. I mean, that's
right.
Some of us are prone to just dump a whole bunch on and, oh, then it's looking yellow, so let's dump a bunch more on. Well, more is not necessarily better.
Right, right, okay. Yeah, could overfeed it. Okay, good. Yeah, well, give that a try, and hopefully have some success. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Right. Yeah,
okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye, Minnie.
All right, Ed, before we finish up here, we're going to get to some country music in a moment, but maybe with the greenhouse, what could we be planting in the greenhouse this weekend?
Oh, well, okay. I don't know about your
Anything.
Greenhouse, but mine at least, when I got up this morning and checked. So it ranged from 40 degrees overnight inside the greenhouse to 98 degrees yesterday inside in the afternoon. So it's time. Soil, certainly things are warming up enough in there that I can feel confident I can probably, I hope won't kill, the tomato plants. My cucumbers I started last week are sprouting, so they're going in there this weekend. And because I've got a friend of mine who said, yeah, he took his plants out there 2 or 3 weeks ago out to his greenhouse. And he's got a little fancier one than mine is. But he said the zucchinis kind of died a slow and painful death, and the cucumbers died a much quicker death because it's just too cold and too gloomy. You know, we weren't having light, and it was very cold, you know, 30,
sure.
You know, high 30s to 50s during the daytime, which is not ideal, and high moisture levels. So all of that was poor. So, again, kind of like if we've been, some of us have been keeping our plants indoors in the house, under those fluorescent lights, and the plants may be getting a bit pot bound for tomatoes. Luckily, that's not such a big deal. They can be pot bound and give you fruit, but you can also tear the roots apart. You can bury them deeper. You know, if they've gotten kind of tall and spindly, you can bury them deeper in the soil. Just lay them down in a trench with just the tips up, and cover them up. They'll root themselves, and away they'll go. They're fine. Zucchinis, cucumbers, some of those are very sensitive to getting root bound. So if they've been in the pot for too long, you pop them out of the pot and they're just packed with roots. And, or are even, I've seen this with zucchinis starting to have a flower or two. That's not good. That's likely to cause them to be severely stunted in their growth. So it doesn't really help. Even just to reburying them, that they aren't necessarily going to start growing vigorously again. So sometimes you're better off just planting some new plants, some new seeds, and starting fresh with those. But the hardening off, we talked about hardening off too. I put mine out, what day was it? I think it was last Saturday afternoon or Sunday in the greenhouse, and put Rime over them because it's a lot brighter out there than it is underneath my fluorescent lights in the house. So that they'd be a little bit shielded from, so they won't get sunburned. If somebody suddenly brings their plants out now and puts them in the greenhouse, they're likely to get sunburned or fried. I mean, possibly killed even. So you do want to buffer, modify that brightness with some of that light And when you go to plant them, you, like I said, with cute tomatoes, at least you can lay them, dig a trench, lay tomatoes in the trench. I mean, I've done the same thing with potatoes since they're closely related. Lay them down in the trench with a long sprout and cover most of it but the tip of that sprout. And then they root themselves. You can water them in with a diluted solution, like maybe 1/4 strength of your compost tea or weed juice or Miracle-Gro, whatever is your favorite plant food. But and then hope that this weather continues, and it looks pretty promising. That we may have to get out your tomato cages and tomato wires and stakes and whatever else you use to support those plants in the greenhouse.
Okay, Ed. Well, this is great. A lot of great advice today, a good talk about trees and shrubs. And I'm looking forward to maybe meeting up with you tomorrow. And if we do, I promise everybody I'll get some pictures of Ed's projects. And that way I can share them with folks here in town.
Okay, sounds good. And remember, everybody should be watching your hanging baskets and potted plants out on your decks in this sunshine. They are pumping a lot of water. So just like us, I'm drinking lots of water today. And those plants need it too. So don't skimp on the water for our all those wonderful plants that are going to give us flowers and fruits and berries and vegetables.
Okay. Thank you, Ed. We'll talk tomorrow.
All right. Good enough.
All right.
See you tomorrow.
All right. Take care.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes.
Support for In the Garden comes from the Flower Farm, offering bedding plants, flowering pansies, trees, shrubs, and hanging baskets in all colors. The Flower Farm, open 10 to 5 every day except Wednesdays at 6 Rory Road, Papke's Landing. Coming up next on KFSK, we have High Country Music with Laura Lee Mason. I'd like to say thank you to Hillary Wood for calling in and contributing to KFSK. We appreciate your support. The phone number here, 772-3808. If you'd like to become a member, we'd love to have your donation.
Well, you can go out to eat, and that's for sure, but it's nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs, you can eat them with gravy. Eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side.